I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Go Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5 kilometre run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5 minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Vichy. Vichy is a doctor-founded dermocosmetic brand with 90 years of skincare expertise. Vichy has established the link between health and beauty and led the way in skincare innovation. Powered by active ingredients, product formulations are clinically proven, hypoallergenic and dermatologically tested for sensitive skin, making Vichy a pioneer in skin health science. Taking a holistic approach to skin health, Vichy is committed to provide safe and effective skincare routines for every skin type at every life stage. All Vichy products are available in pharmacies nationwide. Hello, I hope you are well this week. On the Good Glow this week is my friend Dara Quilty. He has released an album with his band Apella called 1963 and is giving all the sales of this album to cancer support. Dara's mum, Roisin, is undergoing treatment for stage 4 breast cancer. And today Dara speaks to me about having a sick mum, the feelings and emotions that brings, how moving to New York during this time was such a tough decision for him, and why it's okay to ask for help. His message is that no matter what point of your journey you're at, no matter what you may be going through, that it's okay not to be okay. It's okay to still feel sad 10 years later or to still feel scared, but also to know that there is help and support available. I have read things about myself like I should get over my cancer, or I should leave it in the past, or why do I let it define me? And first of all, I don't. I have an amazing family who I love so much. I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, I am a wife. So cancer does not define me, but it's always going to be there. It's always going to be a part of me now. It has affected every part of my life in good ways and in bad ways. So I think it's really important to know that just because you go back to look like your old self, or you may go back to the job you had before you got sick, that you're not going back as the same person, and that's okay. And this is something that I will continue to talk about because I think it's really important. And I don't think that people should be told to shut up about something they've been through. In terms of the Good Glow podcast, I will always use this podcast to give people a voice. The Good Glow community is so supportive and so strong. And I have been through a really tough time over the last couple of months, but the support from my family, Jamie, my mum, my stepdad, Joe, my brothers, Mick and Sam, they've carried me through the last couple of months and they've picked me up off the floor many times. I wanted to be really honest about how I've been feeling lately, and that's been really, really low. But every day I get up and I put my best foot forward. So thank you to Dara Quilty for giving me the strength to speak so honestly about this and open up about it, because it's really important to talk. And through speaking to Dara, speaking to my friends and speaking to my family over the last few months, I've really, really understood the power of a problem shared is a problem halved. I guarantee you won't regret telling someone how bad you might be feeling. And then when that conversation is over, I guarantee you'll feel better. I'm really excited for this year. I'm excited to keep doing this podcast that is about inspiring and empowering stories for people to share the path they've walked down and give hope to others. That is what it's all about. Thank you, Dara Quilty, his gorgeous mum, Roisin. I am thinking about them every day and wishing Roisin well. And I hope that you can support this album for Dara and raise some much needed funds for cancer support. Have a great week. Dara Quilty, welcome to the Go Glow podcast.
Thanks, Georgie. And I need to be honest. I'm nervous. My heart is beating faster than it should be beating. And I never get nervous doing things like this ever. I've done podcasts in New York with comedians who have been on Jimmy Fallon, Conan O'Brien, Stephen Colbert, totally calm as a cucumber. And I'm nervous now. Nervous.
Well, I think it's a big story that you're sharing today, a big part of your life. I think we're so used to Dara Quilty on the radio, on your podcast. You're in control of the narrative, you know, in everything that you do. And today you've kind of handed it over to me to have a chat with you about everything that's going on in your life. And, you know, we've worked together for years and years. I've always had so much respect for you. I've always listened to everything you do because I think you're great at your job. And when you called me last week and explained, you know, what was going on in your life, and people don't often tell me cancer news or stories because people around me try to protect me from it. So I didn't know the extent of what was going on in your life, and we'll get to that. But I suppose in 2020, I was watching you over in the States. Tell us a little bit about what 2020 was like for you and why you decided to go to New York.
Well, you and I know each other for the longest of time. I don't know where we spin 1038 spinnies together. I can't actually remember. Was it 1978 or 79? I don't know. But I had been working in Ireland, mostly on radio, while doing various different projects over there. Like, I did RTE2 television for a while. I had different bands for a while. And I loved it. I loved it all. But it got to a point where I was like, what is the plan here? Where are we going? You know? And I've been dating my girlfriend, Katie, and we've been doing the long distance thing for a while. And I'd kind of decided, you know, I'd always wanted to go and like live in the US for a bit, you know, and see, could I work over there? Am I actually any good? You were very complimentary there, you know, but, you know, what about people who don't know about the 10 years on radio or the 10 years in the studio or whatever? So it was a combination of like, oh, I love this job, but, you know, my last job in Ireland was The Big Ride Home on 98FM. And I was very proud of that show. And I really loved that show. And it was kind of like, I didn't want to go on to like 2FM or Today FM, which I guess in radio land, you'd think would be the next steps, right? Because they're national, isn't it? So I was kind of like, you know, I think I'm ready to try something new. You know, I had hit 30. I mean, I did my J1 visa, but I never got to do the year in London. I'm going to Sydney for 2 years, you know, because I was always working. I got such fulfillment out of everything. Like, I quit a TV show job because I was getting so much fulfillment out of my band, Fox Avenue. So the fulfillment of doing the Olympia Theatre, the Academy, one time we got to open for 30 Seconds to Mars, like, that was mind-blowing. In the Three Arena, like, that was so cool. And like, that was something that I made, I created, and that's where I was getting my fulfillment from. Now, I'm not saying happiness, because as we get old now, Georgie, look at us here in our 30s. Oh my goodness me. You get wiser. So you know now you don't put your happiness in that stuff. But I think fulfillment and happiness are different things. Also, bearing in mind, I'm 20 and I'm an idiot, and, you know, I'm excited by these things. So I had kind of ticked off all of these boxes and goals. And like I said, I did my J1 visa, San Diego. I loved that. And that was really, really cool. And I was lucky I got to do that. And it just came to a point where I was like, dating Katie, I didn't think New York was on the radar. I always thought I'd go to California. But I was basically a commuter to New York. Like, to me, the flight to New York's not long enough. It's 5.5 hours. I'm like, this is too short. I need more sleep. What is this, ridiculous? So I was a frequent flyer over the Atlantic Ocean. And eventually, I was very, very lucky to be in a position to get the visa that I got, this artist visa that you have to present literally a thesis of your life to the American government to say, look how great I am. And I feel like maybe as a fellow Irish person, you know how difficult it is to say, I am great at all of these things. It makes you uncomfortable. So I did it obviously to be with Katie, of course, but also for personal growth and personal development because, you know, I was living in Dublin, working the same job for over a decade, which is at 30 years old to be in the same company for 10 years is a lot like.
Yeah. And it happens to so many people.
It can happen. And not that I felt trapped or anything. It was just something I wanted to do for me. And I handed in, I have a very, very good relationship. 98FM is the company. The parent company is Communicore, with a P, but they don't pronounce the P. I don't know why that is. But that's the parent company and they own radio stations and, you know, things. And I had a very open dialogue with my program director and I had sort of given him a heads up. Like, he knew that I was going to go. And my promise to him was, when I'm going to do it or when I'm done, I will tell you. And I told him. And I wrote my letter of resignation and it felt good. It felt right. It was scary. You've done the same thing. I mean, you've gone out on your own. It's scary. It's
really scary.
Scary.
Because I think especially your colleagues are a little bit like, what are you doing? But did you feel like you had support from Michael that day?
Yeah, or... Michael is the name of the program director, Michael Brett. You know, I had a, like, relationships are really important in work and business in general, I think. People overlook them an awful lot. Like, some people like you, some people don't. I had a good relationship with this guy. He trusted me. He gave me an opportunity to host that show, The Big Ride Home, to the point of, like, I named the show. You know, I sort of had freedom to sort of be that clown on the air. You know, it worked. I was so lucky to win awards throughout the 5 years. So I resign with plenty of notice. You know, I'm saying, look, you know, I'm not going to a competitor. You know, I'm not. This is a whole thing behind show business, babies. You know, if you work for RTE and you're going to Virgin Media, woo, you're going to get blacklisted or whatever nonsense happens. But I wasn't going. Like, they knew that I was going to sort of live life and to grow up and to expand my horizons because, you know, everything makes you an interesting person. I mean, just take Dermot and Dave, for example, like two successful radio guys. Dermot has a degree from Trinity in archaeology. Dave has a degree in business and Russian. Nothing to do with entertainment or comedy. But just having that, Dave speaks five languages. It just makes you a more interesting person. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're a more interesting person, I'm like, God damn it, I need to be more interesting than the guy who's just good at radio. So hand in my resignation before Christmas. And in February, so I think it's a, what is it, like 3 months? Is that you resign and then you got to work out 3 months? I think 3 weeks before I was due to finish and go, my mom, Roisin, is in St. Vincent's private hospital in Dublin with some back pain. And we're like, she must have done something with her back. She works in the DSPCA, you know? Maybe she was lifting a dog. She thinks she was lifting the dog or something and she pulled a muscle. And I vividly remember Katie and I, Katie was here in Dublin. We were going in to visit. And as we were walking into the hospital, the guy at the triage, which is the desk, they have seven floors, stopped me. I said, oh, are you here to see Mrs. Quilty? I said, oh yeah, I'm Dara, her son. And he said, she's just got some bad news. She's a bit upset at the moment. And I'm like, huh? All right, so I asked Katie, I was like, just wait here a minute. So I walk in to the room and I find her buckled over the bed in tears. And I just knew. What the fuck is this? And she said, the cancer is back. And when I say that was the last thing on my list of things I expected. Because my mom had breast cancer in 2010, was diagnosed, was treated, mastectomy, chemotherapy, 5 years of drugs, the whole thing. So to me, it was done. That's it. You only do it once. It doesn't come back. What is this craziness? So it was the last thing that I expected to hear when she went in with that sore back. So I sit with her and I comfort her.
How are you processing that information in that moment? Because you obviously are trying to be strong for your mum, but internally, like, how do you feel?
I mean, we're sitting there crying, but at this point, we don't know what it is yet. So I'm like, all right, well, you had this already. We're in the hospital. We got it the last time. You know, we'll get it this time. This is all the information I have. So we compose ourselves. And Katie's like in this waiting room, has no idea what's going on. So, you know, I'm holding my shit together. I go out and I say, you know, I look at her and I start crying immediately, obviously. So I said, this is what it is. I said, we're going to go in. We're not going to talk about it. And, you know, Katie is like a ball of positivity and stuff. So she came in and we had a good laugh for about an hour, you know, a good laugh about an hour. So we left, go to the car park. And then I'm like fucking angry and upset. And I don't cry a lot. I wish I cried more. I wish I was one of, you know, crying is great. Because you cry and then you feel better after the cry is over. Mm-hmm. But I wish I could do that more. And I'm not, you know me, Georgie, not Captain Masculine over here. You don't look at me and go, well, that guy must be able to bench 200 kilos. So the next day is when we get called in for the family meeting. And I guess I want to preface this to somebody listening. This is only my experience. I am not an expert. Every single experience is different. Every single outcome is different. And every single person's response is different. And I sort of don't like people who, sorry, that sounds negative. I don't like this sort of preaching from a pedestal. I've been through this, so I know everything. Mm-hmm. I know nothing but my own experience. That's all I know. I know nothing about my own experience and my own responses. So I wanted to say that before I sort of delve into details here, that I'm not coming on here as a captain know-it-all by any stretch of the imagination. So the next day is when we're brought in with myself, my sister, my mother, and my grandmother, my mother's mother, who is 83 years old and looks like she's about 57. She is an incredible woman, my mother's mother, Colette. Colette was on the front of the Roscommon Herald because she was one of three women that went to university in 1950 or 1945 or something, you know?
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Growing up, she was the only woman on the street she lived on that had a job, because in the 50s and 60s, the woman stayed at home and worked and did the housework, and the man went out and worked. But not Gran. Gran was a secondary school teacher and a principal right up until retirement. She comes from a farming background. She bought back her father's land in Roscommon with her own money and had that as a holiday home. And she would go down and maintain the land down there. She is so active and so busy. She has lived off of her own bread, her own marmalade. Everything is like, she is I don't know what her secret is. You want to see a picture of this lady? She's just unreal. She's in the We Met at a Party music video for my band Appella.
Really?
She's the lady on the left at the table. Yeah, she's in the video. That was really cool for me to have her in it. So we're in there and it's literally like the movies. And I know you have your own experience of this, Georgie, but getting told, it's literally like the film. You're in the room. They come in. They sit at the other side. They give you great sympathy. But the words out of this woman's mouth, Professor Janice Walsh, who in my mind is an angel in our lives. She is an outstanding woman. And as a family and personally, I have the utmost respect for the work she has done for breast cancer research. I mean, she is from Dublin. I know she studied in America for a bit and she's been back. She's been published in the New England Medical Journal, which is like, I think, the best thing possible in medicine, I believe. What would I know? And she sits there to say that it's stage four. And excuse me, that the cancer has metastasized and it's stage four. Now, cancer comes in stages, as we know, stage mm-hmm. one, stage two, stage three, and stage four. There is no stage five. That's why they say constantly check your breasts if you're a woman, all the time. If you're a guy, check your balls. Keep an eye on things. Because the quicker and earlier you get it, the better the result is. Mm-hmm. And for round one for my mom, she got it pretty early. And, you know, she got through chemo in 5 years. But this time I was like, going from having a sore back to 24 hours later hearing that your mother has stage four breast cancer, you just go, me personally, everyone has a different reaction, just numb. Because it's like, it's if you're holding a shopping bag crossing the road when you have the green man and then a bus comes and just goes plump, so out of the blue.
So hard to process stage four. I'm sure the last thing you were expecting to hear that day.
Absolutely. And in the moment, you can't process it. You almost don't, you don't believe it. And then you're like, oh, I'm the person now who's in this room. I've seen this room on TV. I've seen this. It's with the fluorescent lighting, with the oncologist and the nurse and the sympathy, everything. It's just like that. So I had my sister. I knew my mom was, everyone was in shock. And my sister, who was outstandingly good with my mom, I asked my sister to bring my mom back to the room so I could ask what this means. You know,
is this your younger sister, Dara?
Yeah, my younger
She's
sister.
Younger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she brought her back to the room and I got to ask the hard hitting questions that need, you know, what does this mean exactly? Obviously, you always ask how long, you know.
You did ask that.
Straight away, yeah. Straight away, what does this mean? How long? What's the thing? And she said, actually, you can live with cancer. This sounds really scary for you right now. And a metastasized cancer, you know, right, like, it is metastasized. Metastatic means that it has moved locations. Mm-hmm. So it has moved from the breast, or I think she only has one, but it came back anyway in the sternum or whatever. So it then moves through the body and, you know, can go to various organs. It has its pathway. So she says where it is and where we're at. But this isn't a week. She can live with this. And I know exactly how to treat this. And I'm going to do everything I can. Now, I'm due to move to New York in 3 weeks. I go back to the room. The first thing my mom said to me, "Now, you still go to New York?" First thing she said. Because everything was in motion. I had already resigned and all this stuff was going. So I'm like, oh, yeah, no. Yeah. No, if you know, we'll figure it out. In my mind going, absolutely not. So she's in hospital. So we all process this information. And then we get the information from the hospital that there are so many treatments for people at stage 4 cancer and so many advancements in the science. And it starts to look a little bit less grim. Mm. So I put a pin in New York. Actually, this is the first time I'm saying this. I actually pushed the whole, like, I obviously I didn't go 3 weeks after that diagnosis. I waited for a year or whatever before. It was out of my mind. Like, it's scary enough. It's scary enough giving up everything and going and chasing a dream without shit going on in your life. Mm. Let alone doing it when you've been told this horrid news.
So was this February 2019 then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Early February upon diagnosis. We don't know when it kind of sprung back, but very diligent with her tests and goes, yeah, you know, very diligent with her thing. It's unfortunately, see, again, with cancer, it's complicated. And I mean, I know as much as I know about breast cancer, you know, I don't know much about lung or pancreatic or, you know, liver. There's so many different types, but I know with breast cancer, the biology of the cancer you get is really important. So I'm told about the biology of her cancer, and then I can research that to the best of my ability with full faith in the doctors, by the way, full, you know.
But are you Googling, Dara?
Yeah, but only reading from like medical
papers,
sources. Yeah, because you can Google, like, you know, if you go for a run and you get blood behind your toenail because you ran 8K and you do a Google, they'll tell you, yo, that's probably a sign of cancer in the blood. You know, so, you know.
You got to be careful about what you read. And Jamie did that, you know, as the person, you know, who lived at me and was closest to me when I got diagnosed, started reading these papers. And it really helped me that he was educating himself in it. And it seems like that's the same thing you did.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, because I know you guys did an episode together and it was great to have that perspective of how it affects the other person, particularly the husband of, you know, that's, you know, it's, you know, your parents are older, we get older, they get older, they get sick. It's the unfortunate, harsh reality of life. The older you get, you know, the more shit comes your way. I don't ever like being the victim. This is why I'm nervous about this as well, because I'm not here being a victim of, oh me, guys. I don't like the victim. I like to fight, or like I've been through some shit in my life, but life is complicated. It's difficult. And as you get older, it gets more complicated and more difficult, and you got to navigate. And what I learned from this, when she got diagnosed, I went into a mode that I didn't know that lived within me. And I knew she had a sore back and I knew she was in a hospital bed that went up at the back and up at the feet. So I was like, surely those exist in the world. So I went and researched and found a place in Sandyford called Care to Comfort, who have these beds, like they don't look like hospital beds, but they're specific beds for people that live with pain. And it's all these wooden slats and it goes up this way at the back and up at the feet, you know. And, you know, they're expensive. But I was like, all right, let's get this bed. So she's in hospital for like 2 months. I get this bed. Orthopedic bathroom. How much are they? Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, so I get an orthopedic bathroom put into the house, which we had like, you know, one of these old 80s houses with the bath and the shower, and you got to climb into the, you got to climb your leg over. So I knew that wasn't going to be possible. So I had the whole bathroom renovated. We pulled out everything and they did a beautiful job. It doesn't look like an orthopedic bathroom. Like there's a stool for the shower, so you know, but it folds up nicely into the wall. So it's not like, you know, clinical, but you know, we have bars everywhere, to, you know, and I was just, I don't know what happened. I was just on fire with this shit. And then other people around me found it very difficult. And, you know, I don't want to divulge any personal information of people around me because that's unfair. But I go to see a therapist. And this is kind of the whole point of why I'm here and the point of this album. And my therapist is incredibly helpful with this and for me to digest what was going on, because for about, so I put a pin in New York's out of the picture. I didn't even know if I was ever going to go. I spoke to Janice, so I had made an agreement with myself that if we get 3 scan results that show she's positively reacting to treatment, I'll go to New York. And it was actually and I had been talking to people about this, and was a friend of mine, Rob, who gave me this. It's just, we were driving and I'm, you know, floating this idea with him, and he said, you know, the only way you'll know it's the wrong thing is if you do it. So I was like, Jesus, Rob, what's going on with you, Captain Wisdom over here? So I was worried for about 3 months because I wasn't crying myself to sleep, and I was in the hospital. I was doing all the shit. Some people around me were struggling. I was keeping them strong, you know, and dealing with the information, like Jamie, researching the biology of the cancer, the medication she's on. I have literally 2 drawers of like, I have files of cancer research. Do you know what I mean? Like 2 folders of information. I don't know. It's all I felt I could do is like, if I know, the more I know about this, the better, surely. So I go to my therapist anyway, and I'm like, hey, am I a psychopath? Because it seems like this is affecting other people a lot worse than it's affecting me. And this is what he said to me. And again, I'm not an expert. Everybody's experience is unique. He said, you're experiencing a crisis, most likely the first crisis of your life. And he would be right there. He said, we don't know how we respond to a crisis until we're in a crisis. So there's the cliche, people say fight or flight, but people also forget about freeze. So fight, flight or freeze, you know, that can happen. And it's important to know that all of those things are okay. If you freeze up and you don't know what to do, that's not you. That's just your body's innate response. Some people flight, that means like, oh, I got to get away from this. I don't want to have anything to do with this. I can't, you know, You can't control that. That happens. So he said, evidently, and I'm an anxious puppy. And I learned this about myself, that evidently I can cope really well in chaos. But if you send me a DM on Instagram, Dara, saying, hey, didn't like that podcast, I don't really like you as a person, I'll crumble into the ground and cry for 4 days. So it's just whatever, I'm strange. So that was interesting. That was a big learning personally about.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. But first, I wanted to tell you about Vichy's iconic hydration serum, Mineral 89. Enriched with hyaluronic acid and 89% Vichy volcanic water, which is naturally found in French volcanoes and rich in 15 minerals essential to skin health. This beautifully light gel serum gives your skin immediate hydration and glow. Think of it as a daily multi-mineral for your skin. The perfect first step in any skincare routine, suitable for all skin types. It can be used every morning and or night after cleansing your skin.
for a 25% discount on Mineral 89 50ml or 75ml. Use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on marspharmacy.ie. The offer is available on online purchases only until midnight, February 28th. Now, back to my conversation.
Me throughout this.
Did that help you to understand?
Hugely. Hugely. I would advise anybody to go to see a counselor or a therapist. I wish I did it younger. I wish I did it when I was younger. Before this cancer thing, I really, really wish I did it when I was younger, but I didn't because I'm Irish and I was afraid if I go, he's mental. He goes to therapy, you know, he's mental. And I hate that. I've been sort of subtly trying to do this on my own podcast. I've had people share stories of issues with mental health, but it doesn't define them. It doesn't define you as a person whatsoever. But it's really hard to pick up the phone and do it. And then it's even harder because the first lady you go and see, you don't click. So then you got to go find another lady. You don't click with her. Then you find this guy. So it's hard. But when you find somebody you click with, and it's nothing like you think it is. I thought it was mahogany table, man with glasses, VHS tape, hit record, patient 04856, Dara Quilty. That's what I thought it was, rather than me and a guy sitting in a room with their legs crossed saying, what's going on? How are you today? This is obviously different types of therapy. And that really, really, really helped me through all of this because I had a place to go to say all of my thoughts and sort of construct, you know, am I okay? Sometimes, you know, and I'm so lucky. My sister and I have such a good, solid relationship that we can share. We share everything with each other, you know.
So were you good at talking to people around you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd say from 28 to 32, I would say I did the most personal growth in my entire life, just based on my experience of the past, you know, and I'm continuing to grow as a person. I remember when the very first time I went to see a therapist, I didn't tell anybody that I was doing it. And I was meeting Ray Foley for lunch and Ray Foley was late. And he was late and he storms in. Blah, 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 blah. He's like, sorry, I was at the account. The therapist session ran over. And I was like, huh? This is years ago. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, oh, I go to see this woman every Wednesday. It's an hour and it helps me get my shit together. Now, I never told him that I was doing it. But hearing him, a grown-up, he's older than me, hearing him say that he's doing it made me feel like, if Ray is doing it and he so casually dropped it into conversation and then we moved on and we had lunch, that really normalized it for me. And that was many, many years ago. So where, I guess to bring it back to what we're talking about here, when my mom was initially diagnosed with cancer in 2010, I remember her coming home from the hospital and my Auntie Mary and my sister were in the car with her and the car pulled up into the driveway. This is 2010. I don't know what age I am, 20 or so. No, 21, 2. Anyway, car pulls into the driveway and I can see into the car and I knew it was bad news. They came in and I had to go and play a gig. Fox Avenue were booked to play to like 1,200 teenagers. Literally, the evening of this. So they pull into the driveway, get told it's breast cancer. This is round one. And I don't know what to do. I'm too young and I'm not equipped. And we were told, hey, it's early on. This is what it is. She's going to get chemo, but she's going to be fine. And once I heard she was going to be fine clinically, I was like, okay. Then I had to leave, go and do this gig. I told Paddy, the lead singer of Fox Avenue, I cried in the car. I went and did the gig. I got home. And my mom, you know, she didn't really, she said, you know, I'm okay. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. The doctor said, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. She did the chemo. You know, we did the 5 years of medication and she was 5 years clean. And to celebrate this, we actually, with my amazing grandmother, we went to California together as a family. And we did this big road trip from San Francisco right down to San Diego, right? And what I didn't know was she wasn't okay mentally in her head. Even though the doctors told her she was fine, everything's okay, she's clean on paper, and then she's an Irish mom, and she was saying, I'm fine, love, I'm grand, and she wasn't. She wasn't okay. She was traumatized because she had been through the war zone. And there was a very dark period where we lost her for a while mentally after that initial diagnosis. Again, I was unaware. There was no discussion of mental health. I was unaware because you think they're grown-ups. They'll figure it out, you know? And she really needed help in that time. And we got help. When we found out what was wrong, we got help. And she had lost her job when she got diagnosed because there was, she was working in architecture, architectural administrator. The recession happened. So that hits architecture. She lost her job. Her father, my grandfather, passed away. Then she got breast cancer all back in 2010. So that's like wham, bam, bam, life. Gets through it. But she's not okay out the other end of it. So, you know, we're 4 or 5 years later, we're still like fighting. And this is where I realized, oh my God, you know, this post-traumatic stress disorder. But she would never opened up about it. And when she did open up about it, I'm a little bit older. We were able to spring into action. It was a really difficult time. We found her help. She got help. She got a job in the DSPCA. The minute she got a job in the DSPCA, it was old mom was back again. Because my mom, Roisin, when I was growing up, she was involved in all of the things. I played rugby up in De La Salle, Palmerston. She would come up every single Sunday. All of my friends, we'd all be wedged into the house for lunch, you know? So she was really involved. She was on the residence committee. She was always so active in the community. And then all that stripped away. And I've realized that that's a lot of happiness lies in being an active member in your community, wherever it may be. And, you know, being busy and taking responsibility for yourself. And like my mom always helped other people in need. But when she was the one that needed help, she didn't put her hand up and say, hey, I need help right now. Mm-hmm. So we get her through this. We get help. And then she's at the DSPCA. Life is good. And 2 years or 3 years later, we're hit with this stage 4 diagnosis. And now I'm a bit more equipped. Now I'm a little bit more in the know of how important her well-being is. When I was 20, 21, I was like, somebody said she's going to be fine. All right. A 21-year-old guy can't sit on the head. Hey, are you feeling okay, mom? I didn't have the knowledge to do it. But she never admitted it. So re-diagnosed. My mom is now living with breast cancer. She's not the only lady living with breast cancer. There are many ladies living with breast cancer. And I would like to mention Ray Kyo, who's been involved with the band Depella. He's an incredibly talented cinematographer. He shot a lot of videos. Yeah, he's been working with my band since day one. And Ray lost his mother, Karen, to breast cancer before Christmas. So I would just like to give a special acknowledgement to Karen Keogh after 13 years of fighting. And so with the New York thing, I was not going to go unless there were three scans that showed response to treatment. Because how could I? Even though that's all she talked about. Go, go, go. Go now, go now. And I said, like, you know, I kind of was like, no, I this visa issue, I can't, whatever. I need to save more money or whatever.
Did you go back to 98 in this time?
So, well, this is very important because I had to revoke my notice to 98 and explain. And this is the first time I understood what it was like to be part of a company that I felt so valued because they were so understanding. And back on the show, and it was touch and go. My mom got a double pneumonia 2 months into treatment. She went into critical condition from double pneumonia. I was due to fly to New York just for a week, you know. The oncologist said, cancel that flight. You can't go. If we don't nail this in 48 hours, you know, she was in the HDU. It was terrifying. So I said, oh, Jesus, okay. I ring Katie. Katie literally leaves work and flies home. But she fought off that double pneumonia and she beat that like in 2 days. This is a Dr. Paolo in St. Vincent's Private who saved her life. And the treatment starts. So I'm going in, we're doing chemo. There was radiotherapy, there was chemotherapy, and there was hormone therapy. And the plan was outlined by Professor Walsh, and I, you know, was very aware. She's so clear and so smart, and there's a plan A and a plan B. So we do the round of chemo, or we do radiation first, responds well. Do chemo, responds well. Do a scan, cancer markers are down. Great, we'll keep on doing this. A couple of months later, another scan, markers are down. Great. Onto the long-term treatment, which was a hormone treatment. Palbociclib was the name of the drug, mm-hmm. New drug for, you know, advanced stage 4 patients. But bearing in mind, it's to do with the biology of my mom's cancer. Every cancer has a different biology. In the breast cancer, there's like hormone receptor negative, hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative and positive. You know, so you kind of pick up this lingo as you go. And her cancer markers were going down and down and down. She was able to drive. She was able to walk. She's out and about in the town. Now, she's going through treatment. So, you know, chemo knocks you for 6. So I wasn't leaving for that. So we got 3 scans and we had the markers down from X to Y. Substantially, she's responding well to treatment. You can live with this disease. So I said, okay, I'm going to go and try New York. I'm going to go. And if I feel like I've done the wrong thing, I'll move home after 4 weeks. If things get worse, I'll be on. There's like 3 daily flights from Dublin to New York. But things were okay. So I moved in August or whenever. And things were fine. Constantly on FaceTime. You know, the treatment was ongoing, so she didn't have to go in every Friday for, you know, it was pills and pain management, and things were going okay. But then the pandemic hit, and then the Trump administration issued a travel ban. So that's when things started to get very tricky for me, because with the travel ban, anybody on any visa, once you left the United States, you could not re-enter if you had been in Ireland for 14 days. So again, open line of communication and honest communication with my sister. I said, hey, what's going on? You have the power. Anytime something's up, call me. There's a 6:15 Aer Lingus flight running. I'll be on that flight anytime. She was fine throughout the year, but it got to a point recently where I felt like this has been too long now. So, you know, I need to be back. You know, my sister has been, you know, doing the appointments for a couple of months, because I was coming back, bear in mind, when I moved, every 5 weeks or something, or 6 weeks. So I'd come back for a week or two and, you know, check in, do all the stuff, go back to New York. But there were some dark nights in New York. There were some dark nights where I found myself in my studio at 2 o'clock in the morning on forums, not posting, just reading of other people with stage 4 cancer parents that live abroad, just reading and reading and reading, because I needed to read somebody saying it's okay. You know, I live in Sydney and my mom is here and, you know, it's okay.
Did you ever find that?
Oh, I found people who are like, you need to go home now. And I found people that said, you need to live your life. And then I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, what am I looking for? What answer am I looking for here? So, because this is the thing. You got to live your life when you get news like this. Your parent wants you to live your life, but you want to care for your parents. So you got to, like, it is okay for you to live your life. It's really important. And particularly, I was lucky that I had the blessing of my family to do so. And I had the means to travel back and forward. So New York, Georgie, is 5 hours and 30 minutes on a flight. Or 5 hours if you have the wind behind you. So support is everything. Support structures are everything. And there was a window of time. It was the perfect window of time. And the pandemic hit and New York shut down. So it was like, all right, thanks, universe. I'm going to go back to Ireland for a little while. And now I've been
here.
So you
took that as a sign.
There was, yeah, a little bit of like, you know, there's a travel ban in place. This place is about to go into civil war over here. Manhattan is shut down. I like Katie's working from home for the foreseeable future. It's so weird. It's a weird thing that we both can be here and she can work, you know? So I've just come back for a while to be with my mom I've been here for a while and it's been good. But it didn't feel weird because I talked to my mom all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And she had been in hospital when I was in New York. So I would go on FaceTime. And she used to love a virtual walk. So like I would take her on a walk with me on FaceTime and
nice.
I'd show her around.
That's lovely.
One time I had to return a rental car back to Newark and I didn't realize underneath of the tunnel. It's the Lincoln Tunnel, whatever tunnel goes in from New York to New Jersey. You got full signal. So I was able to take her under the tunnel with me into New Jersey in the car and she thought that was really cool. So like you can't do it. And maybe there's somebody listening that's abroad. Like it's okay to be abroad, even though everything in your body tells you to go back. And if everything in your body tells you to go back, do go back. Like, you got to listen to your body. You got to listen to your body, I think, and also be aware of the situation. Be aware of the situation at home. And we're lucky that we have a very open dialogue about this. And what's really interesting is, you know, I've had people come at me with absolute nonsensical bullshit in the last 2 years who have no idea what I'm going through, you know, that kind of way. And it changes your perspective, but it's really important to know that not everybody sees things the way you do. So if someone comes at me with some nonsensical bullshit, I'm like, okay, well, that's really important to you. And if that's important to you, I respect that, but I don't want to have anything to do with it. You know.
Yeah, I think that's an important lesson you learn as you live through things.
It is. It is wild. I don't know what's around the corner. But you can do it. And it's important for the sons and the daughters, the families and the friends, and more importantly than anybody else with breast cancer. And I know men can get breast cancer, but let's be honest, it's mostly affecting women. It is so important to put your hand up and be afraid and say, I'm not okay. Because there are so many support groups available. And once you begin, all of that weight and tension will be lifted. Because if you're a mom, you might not want to tell your son or your daughter because you're
trying to protect them.
Yeah, because you're a parent, Georgie. I know for a fact that all you want to do through COVID, through everything, is protect yourself and protect Pia.
Through my cancer, all I wanted was for her to be happy. Like, I didn't really care about myself. My whole life revolved around her. Like, I'm sure your mum's life revolves around you guys. All you want is for your kids to be happy. That's enough.
But that's a unique perspective you have now as a parent, where you couldn't have possibly thought of that before you were a mom. Mm. So you couldn't understand that perspective until you have a child. Mm. And now you have one, and you have a happy one with a healthy, awesome mom. So like, the outcome here for you is great. And what you've done is taken a chaotic diagnosis in your early 30s and flipped it over on its head, because there would be no good glow if you didn't go through what you went through. I don't know if you would have done this podcast without your experience. And thus, you have helped God knows how many people by creating a conversation with people from all walks of life and different things. And that's what's really important. And the continuing to normalize, like, reaching out for help. So we did this Great Pink Run this year, and I know Breast Cancer Ireland are a big support of this podcast, and you're very heavily involved. And Breast Cancer Ireland are a tremendous organization for research and for science and for, like, these drugs that become available to help save lives. So my sister and I signed up to do the Great Pink Run this year, the virtual one. And we kind of just thought we'd do it as a pick-me-up for my mom. And, you know, we signed up on like the Wednesday, and the thing was on Saturday. And I was like, oh, you know, we'll just do it. We'll get the t-shirts. Mom will think it's fun. You know, we'll do 5K, 10K, whatever. So a bunch of my friends, we all teamed up, like, and did it. And my sister said, well, I set up a fundraiser page, like, because it's built into the Breast Cancer Ireland thing. And she goes, I was like, I don't know. It's probably too late. Is it like... is it too late? I don't know. So she set one up anyway. We just see how we do. So she set it up. My mom was in hospital during this time. And, you know, we put it out there. And we had a bunch of people on our quote unquote team doing the run in like London, New York, and all over the place. And, you know, within like 2 hours, we had like €1,000. And we're like, Jesus Christ. Then 1,000 became 2,000. Then 2,000 became 4,000. Then 4,000 became 5,000. And then my mom's in the hospital refreshing the feed going, look, guys, it's almost that. Oh, my God. So within like 6 or 7 days, we did the run on Saturday or Sunday or whatever day it was. We all did the 5K. And I think within 6 days, I think it was like 8,000 or 7,900 we got for Breast Cancer Ireland. And I was like, I didn't expect that to happen. I was like, whoa, that's a lot of money very fast. So I'd wanted to do something with my album. So I'm in this band called Appella. And, you know, I've got a few singles out there. I love every ounce of it. It's fulfilling for me. Fulfillment. I get fulfillment from creating music in studios. And I love it, every second of it. So I have this album, and the goal was to record the album in full before I turned 30. And I did that. But then it sat on my phone, Georgie, for 2 years, and I did nothing. I was afraid. You know what? Since we're all being honest here, I was afraid to release it because I thought, this is my life's work. If I release this and it tanks, if I release this and I don't become Brandon Flowers from The Killers overnight, I'm a failure. So I got over that ridiculous thought. All I want is for my album to exist in the world. That's it. Nobody's going to buy CDs or vinyls anymore. So I've partnered up with the Marie Keating Foundation, because what they do in there is they have a lot of support services. So what I'm doing is the Appella 1963 is the name of the album. That is the year my mom was born. Obviously, of course, it's for my mom, but it's also for all women. It's for Ray's mom. Georgie, it's for you. It's for anybody, any woman, family, boyfriend, husband, daughter, son that has been affected by breast cancer. It's for everybody. And I'm going to donate 100% of the sales of this album are going to go to the Marie Keating Foundation, specifically to their support structure that they have, because this is what I think is so important, is support. And like you said, Jamie, I know Jamie for years. We had always a great relationship. Jamie's gone off. He's informed himself on your cancer. But maybe somebody doesn't want to do that or know how to do that. And you know what? If you don't know how to do that, that's okay. There are support services available. The Marie Keating Foundation have things like positive living. They have survive and thrive. They have BRCA support, which is the cancer gene. They have community service. They have like a nursing team. They have seminars. Unfortunately, with COVID, everything happens on Zoom. But just to talk to somebody else who may be going through what you're going through, they have the services. And that those services require time, money, and people. So like a lot of money goes into the science. And I feel like I did my Great Pink Run for Breast Cancer Ireland. So I am happy to do this, because I don't expect to, like, you know, I don't expect to sell any CDs, but I was like, there's going to be a vinyl, there's going to be a CD, and there's going to be like a sort of download and donate. So if you want to throw a fiver, a tenner, or 10 grand to donate, download the album, you get a nice vinyl, whatever. But all of the money, 100%, is going to the Marie Keating Foundation. That does not count the recording money. It's literally 100% of the proceeds from the sales are going directly to the support structure they have in place. And all I need people to do is to get behind it. And I'm comfortable if it tanks. If it doesn't go well, that I tried something, it didn't work, that's okay. But by buying the vinyl, buying the CD, or downloading it, every single penny is going to go to the Marie Keating Foundation, specifically to the support, because Georgia, you know, you fucking need it. You need support. And
it's an amazing thing that you're doing. I know you're not doing it for anyone to tell you that.
No, definitely not. I'm uncomfortable with that as well. Irish. Yeah.
I know. But it is an amazing thing you're doing. I'll put all the links in the episode show notes. But I suppose my question to you, and I'm sure your mum thinks what you're doing is so special. You've called the album after the year she was born. It's so beautiful. And your music is beautiful. But like, what is it? You know, I'm sure your mum will listen to this. What is it you want your mum to know?
Oh, I want my mum to know, firstly, that I love her from the bottom of my heart and always will. And secondly, this is a homage and an acknowledgement to how supportive she has been to me on my wild endeavors over the years, from like dropping out of college to go for a career in radio when like nobody in my family has anything in this business, from quitting RTE television to go on tour with Fox Avenue, you know, before the cancer, for really thinking I'm doing the right thing by going to New York, and just for constantly, like, just always believing in me. She understands me, and there are other very hard times I've been through that she's been supportive and understanding and caring of. And, you know, not everybody is lucky. Not everybody has a mom that supports them and gets them through shit. And sometimes in life, the tables turned, and now I'm here supporting her and getting her through this. So I want her to see this album in the world, because she knows how hard I worked on it. And, you know, she gets so much satisfaction out of seeing, like, my sister is also really accomplished in the events industry. You know, she's traveled the world and done events all over. And I know she's so proud of my sister Aoife for, like, you know, she gets to tell her, you know, our neighbor Nuala, oh, Aoife's in India, she's doing an event. And, you know, she's always been so proud of us. And this is my homage and appreciation for that. I don't know if, I don't know where I would be if I had one of those strict ass parents who says, no, you can't do this. No, you'll be an accountant. So that's, she's always been there and I will always be there for her, always. And that's what this album means. Obviously, it's, you know, it's for my mom, but it's also for everybody. I don't want to make this about me. I don't want to make this about, you know, my woes. This is genuinely just to send a message to all people. There could be some fella listening to this right now. I have no idea. He may have just found out today that his mom got diagnosed with cancer and he doesn't know what the fuck to do. So I want that guy just to know, if he just pick up the phone and call for support, call for help. It'll be the best thing. It will be the best thing you'll do. And if you're an Irish mom, if you're an Irish daughter, or Irish, why am I saying Irish as if other people don't matter? Any lady who's not okay, even if you're 5 years clear of your cancer and you're not okay, don't pretend to be okay. Just because the doctors have told you clinically you're great, there's no sign of remission, or does remission, or you're in remission, there's no sign of return of the disease. If you go to bed at night petrified that the disease is going to come back and get you, go and talk. Go and find other women. This is what they offer. This is the Marie. This is what they do. They have groups. You're not the first person to feel this way. There's 7 billion people on the planet and there's been God knows how many before. I feel like there are no more original thoughts or feelings left. Whatever you feel, somebody else is feeling it. And I know my mom connects with a lady in England called Nikki because they're on the same chemo. Nikki is a girl in her 30s who's going through chemo. She has metastatic breast cancer. She's living with cancer. And my mom and Nikki message. And my mom gets solace. And I don't know Nikki, but thank you, Nikki. Imagine reaching out to 4 other women and being on a Zoom call and somebody else saying, oh, I feel the same way. It's so important is to reach out for help if you're not okay. And cancer is terrifying. And Georgia, you know this. Georgia, you know this more than I know this. You know, I don't know what it's like to be told the news, but you know. And the support of Jamie surely made your treatment a hell of a lot easier.
I think, you know, it's all about support. It's all about the people you have around you. And if you don't have that support at home or with your friends, like you said, this is what the Marie Keating Foundation are doing. And, you know, there is different ways to get support. And I think you telling your story, you've done such an important thing today. And you will help so many people. And I know it wasn't easy for you for one second, but I feel like, you know, I've gotten to know a little bit more about what's been going on in your life. And I think what you're doing is amazing. And we're all rooting for you and your gorgeous mum. And thank you so much for opening your heart today.
Georgie, thank you. This is a genuine, I've never, ever spoken honestly like this on a show before. I'm not the answer to people's questions. I'm not a know-it-all. I only have a little experience. Some people are alone. All I can say is please just get on the phone, get on the email, whatever works for you, and just ask for support. And if you are in a position to pick up this album, it's appellamusic.com. There's vinyl CD. Every single penny, 100%, all of it is going to the Marie Keating Foundation for all the support that they do, because that's what I've come to realize, that your support team is you know, almost as, not as important, but almost as important as the doctors. you know?
Yeah, and it's like my oncologist said to me when it came to counselling, like I'd finished my treatment, and she just said, it's time. It's time for counselling. And that was the little push that I needed.
Had you never done it?
No, I waited till I was finished treatment to do counselling. I didn't feel like I had the energy during treatment to talk about it. But I went, and it was the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Can I ask, just because I've been rambling on about and the importance of it, can I ask the first time you did it pre-COVID, you were in a room with your counselor? Obviously, it was scary, but can I ask what that was like for you? Because this might reiterate my point a bit more, because you've been through it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it felt like I'd just done a yoga session. Like I felt so much calmer. I felt free, and we worked really hard to unblock a lot of stuff that I was ironically holding in my chest. And, you know, when I realized that I carried my stress in my chest, it was, whoa, that was a crazy week, because I couldn't stop thinking about it. I never thought about where I held my stress before, and she worked through that with me. And as I said, it just made me free. And, you know, obviously cancer will always be a worry, but I get to put my best foot forward, and that's all I can do every single day.
Yeah. And you're doing amazing. And what you're doing for it is amazing. And the message you're putting out there is amazing. And I have no other words to say but amazing, evidently. I need to broaden my lexicon. But
Adara, thank you.
Thank you.
I wish you every success.
Just please buy the album. Buy the album. We'll get some money for the Marie Keating Foundation.
Best of luck, Dara. I'll certainly be downloading it.
I'm sweating.
Thank you again for today.
I'm sweating. Oh my goodness. I was so nervous before this, Georgie. Thank you for not making me cry. We're all fighters. Keep on fighting.
Thank you for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Vichy. If you enjoyed this episode, please do subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. If you want to learn more about my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford or head over to my website, thegoodglow.ie.